Welcome to Forward Forum. Yeah, I'm not sure. Oh, well. Hey.
It's a good way on our second show for the new format.
That's right.
Together.
That's right.
And there's going to be some bumps along the way. But
we can discuss later whether it was God's will or not.
That's a good way to start.
That's getting a little too profound, I suppose. But yeah. Well, anyway, everybody, welcome to Forward Forum. John Quinlan here with
Stephanie Woods.
And we are here on our January 25th, 2009 second show in our new time spot. But we are very excited to have for the full hour two of my favorite people in Madison. Luckily, I keep on running into them at the buffet, and we get to catch up every now and then. And that's Chuck and Jean Pfeiffer. And our discussion that we're going to be having all throughout the hour is about the intersection of spirituality and politics. That's probably where we'll end up at the end of the hour. But we have an interesting starting off point in that we're going to be talking about a very fascinating seminar that both Chuck and Jean have been leading now for several years. And I had the chance to participate in at least part of that a couple of years ago. And it's called the Historic Jesus Seminar. And it's really fascinating to talk about the life of Jesus in some ways, as a man, in the context of his time, in terms of the politics and you know, the realities of 2,000 years ago, which I think we forget sometimes. We forget that it was a very different world in a lot of ways, although maybe similar in other ways. But it should be interesting, don't you think?
I am very excited. Religion is always one of my favorite topics, hot topics to discuss. So I'm so glad that you guys are here.
I think I've shared with other folks. So I'm a Methodist pastor's kid who has been on a constant search, you know, for other churches. And right now I'm a member of a United Church of Christ church. And that's partly driven by being a gay man and looking for a place that's really affirming. Do you mind sharing with our listeners just kind of what your background is?
Oh, well, I have to admit that I am I was baptized Catholic, and beyond that, I don't practice anything. I'm more of a spiritual person without the organized religion. It just doesn't work for me.
Well, Chuck was telling us in spiritual is probably the word
which
to
I think
use,
makes
which,
a lot of
which
sense.
It's much more inclusive.
It's a lot more broad.
Given
chance, you know, speaking of
that's right.
If we could turn just for a second, I was impressed with Obama.
Yeah.
During his speech this week.
Okay.
Not only did he address the Jews, the Christians, Hindus, and I can't remember the last group, but he also addressed the non-believers.
Yeah.
I loved it. That made me so happy.
Yeah, that is.
Because
it's
he's
refreshing.
Not throwing us to the side. He's saying these are people too, and I'm going to acknowledge them. And I was really touched by that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, look, not to contradict your point. There was another side, though, in that you know, religion pervaded the inaugural. I mean, the different prayers,
and that's fine. That's great.
You know, of course, the controversy over Rick Warren, and then Bishop Gene Robinson, who's an openly gay Episcopal bishop, and some of the other things. Well, you know, I think it is. It's just that, you know, for example, there were folks that were wondering why was the Lord's Prayer told, you know, as part of the invocation, when that necessarily isn't inclusive of everybody.
Mm. People can respect. I mean, I don't subscribe to that belief, but I can still say, okay, this is a momentous event, and people need to deal with it in whatever way makes their heart feel more full. I'm fine with that. I'm open-minded.
I think so. It just that, again, it was an official context, and you know, somebody said it was the lead act. It wasn't it wasn't, you know, something peripheral. And Not everybody feels included under that. And there is this notion that we're a Judeo-Christian nation, you know, and somehow that excludes everybody else.
What would be a more appropriate all-inclusive act that you can think of?
Well, you know, I think actually a lot of his prayer was inclusive of folks, and it was more general. It was also just asking for prayers of support for the family. You know, it addressed ecology. It addressed the poor people of the world. I mean, that's another interesting thing that's happening. And Rick Warren, as much as we aren't too fond of somebody has to say about gay people, you know, is a different kind of evangelical who's really embracing some of those missions. And you know, there's a lot of common ground for those of us who consider ourselves to be, you know, left of center to work with them. I mean, we never would have expected that. So,
is there a better way, though, that would include, you say, you know, starting with the Lord's prayers and is there a better way to do that? I can't think of,
you know, I guess,
any,
you know,
other
when
way.
When I find myself in settings, because, you know, like, you know, as you know, I just became president of the United Nations Association. I think I invoke people to remember people in their thoughts and prayers. Mm. I really try to find language that would not exclude someone of a non-Christian faith.
We'll have to work on that, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting question. But hey, having said that, how did you feel this week?
Fantastic. Yeah? It was great. I had heard somebody say, you know, on some broadcast, you will always remember where you were when Obama got inaugurated. And I thought, you know what? I don't remember where I was when Bush got in. Not that that was something that I was going to celebrate, but or Clinton. I don't know where I was. And I thought, what's going to make this significant to me? And all day long, I kept trying to log on to CNN.com illegally at work, trying to get some kind of broadcast. And a friend of mine IM'd me and said, hey, you know, I'm listening to him on the radio. So what we did was I found out through the grapevine that in the auditorium, they didn't advertise it,
but they had it.
So through word of mouth, and he and I were walking down the hall, and through his iPod, we each had an earphone, and we were walking shoulder to shoulder, you know, trying to make it there without stepping on each other's toes. And we heard him be sworn in, and then we finally got there. I thought, I'm never going to forget this. What were you doing? You were doing something very special, actually.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd originally planned to go to Monona Terrace, where a lot of community people were gathered, and I should talk to somebody and find out how that turned out. I'm sure it was very meaningful, but it was actually a fairly small room, their theater, and I was kind of wondering, was going to be a bit crowded. And I think, like a lot of people, you know, we originally planned to be at a party or at a, you know, familiar hangout or something, but we ended up being in fairly intimate settings. And in my case, it was with another friend who is a gay man who happens to be a Unitarian minister. And Daryl and I had gone down to Selma together, and we were with Joanne Bland, who's been on the show very frequently.
Right.
He is a veteran who is up from Selma to do speaking on campus, and she's the founder of the National Voting Rights Museum. At 11, she had marched into the Selma to Montgomery March.
She's fantastic.
And it's just become a dear friend over the years. And I actually got to spend the night of Obama's nomination with her down in her living room in Selma. And, you know, just it was so beautiful to be able to share this moment with her. And, you know, if you remember early in the campaign, Michelle Obama was criticized because at one of the landmark moments, she said something about, for the first time in a long time, I love this country. And of course, that was just totally distorted and people didn't understand. But for anybody who's an African-American who's put up with Jim Crow and these decades of intolerance, you know, they understand the context for that. And so for Joanne Bland, as we were watching the three of us found ourselves humming along and then singing along with the national anthem.
That's great.
And then there was this moment of silence, and she said, that's the first time I felt proud enough of my country in 30 years, you know, to sing that song.
That's pretty amazing.
So it just it was very special to be able to spend that with her. She's had a chance, as we've talked about on the show, to spend extended periods of time with Obama. He's come to Selma. He's embraced that history, you know, despite what people say about somehow that he couldn't be too black or he couldn't embrace the current generation, you know, the older generation of civil rights activists. It's not the case. I mean, he's hungry. He's thirsty for anything he can find about it. So he broke away from this black tie dinner, and he spent 3 hours wandering the museum with her and learning about the history.
And didn't she put her hand in his back pocket or something? Or how did that go?
Joanne loves it. Yeah, we love this sort of somewhat off-color story. she had his arm around, you know, in his dress shirt, and he just whispered to her, you know, Joanne dear, you know, I hate to say this, but I need to wear this shirt later, and it can't be wrinkled. So if you can put your fingers into my belt loop, and
lead me around,
and only she can tell the story in any kind of good taste. But essentially, for two weeks after that, she said, and I never washed these two fingers that were in Barack Obama's pants. You know, so yeah. So it was.
That's great.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, and it was this week of so many different emotions. His sense of humor is something that, you know, was kind of fun to have. Although he's not going to be nearly as much fun to make fun of as the outgoing president or administration.
No, unfortunately not.
But you know, the other thing that touched me is you'd catch these vignettes, and I've heard this too from friends that were on the ground in D.C. You know, here you are, you're standing on the mall, you know, in the cold, scrunched in next to people. And, you know, and that could have been just this horrible waiting period, you know, where nothing was going to happen and you were just, you know, on edge until finally the inauguration comes. But that's not what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, people bonded, you know, with people from all over the country and from whole different walks of life. And I don't know, they were doing silly things like the hokey pokey together. And then
to keep warm.
Yeah. You know, and everybody's got these great stories, these great friendships. And of course, in this day and age, you share your email and you text message each other, you know, all throughout the weekend. And
that's what it's about.
You know, it struck me that what a humanizing moment, you know, and it's just, you know, so we all got to know each other in really great ways. And I don't, you know, sometimes you say, you know, so the disappointing part of it, it all just fades away. But I don't think it's just going to fade away.
I hope not.
I think something great
is
happening.
We got to keep him in line. We got to, you know, keep him on his game. But I, so far, I'm impressed what he's been doing.
We do indeed. Hey, just a preview for next week's show. I think we've got it in place. Speaking about humanizing, I was sharing with you one of the movies that I saw actually on Tuesday night, which was
the movie that everybody's talking about that I need to see.
It is the perfect way to cap out the evening with Slumdog Millionaire, and it takes place in Bombay and or Mumbai now. And 20 years ago, my mom and I, you know, my mom had been a Methodist missionary and had always wanted to go back. So 35 years after that period in the early 50s, it was 1989, we went. And two of her best friends had lived there for many years and were able to show us around. But the thing we saw as we came in from the airport were these shacks called hutments that are built out of cardboard and corrugated metal and, you know, just don't look like they can stand up to almost anything. You know, they're just the basic level of shelter. And this story all takes place within these villages of these shacks. But just in brief, and we'll have a chance to talk about it more next week, it just humanized the condition of the folks living in those shacks. And we got to see a lot of stuff behind the scenes in India. I think a lot of tourists don't get to see, but we never really ventured into that part of town. And I just, again, it you know, I think the theme of this week is getting to know somebody who comes from an experience that's radically different from your own and realizing human beings just like they are and have some of the same wants and needs and dreams and everything. And
same but different.
Yeah. And it's right. It's an intense movie, don't get me wrong. And it deals with a lot of really horrible realities, but at the bottom line, you fall in love with these three kids and it's just amazing. Hey, we want to emphasize that throughout this discussion, and in just a second, we'll engaging in discussion with our two very patient guests, Chuck and Gene Pfeiffer. We want to invite your discussion as we discuss the historic Jesus, also the intersection of spirituality, religion, politics in the here and now, in a positive direction in the sense that one of the subjects we do hope to introduce into the hour is talking about folks who feel in exile from communities. Unfortunately, someone trivialized that, but it is indeed something that I think those of us who are gay, I think, you know, and the people from other experiences, used to be someone who had been divorced or otherwise been seen as a sinner in the eyes of the church, also had that sense of exile, and that's a very painful thing, and hopefully something that more and more churches are moving beyond and reaching out to. We have another.
We do. We've got Diana in Middleton.
Go ahead, Diana.
Hi. The reason I wanted to call, first of all, was as somebody who did make it to Monona Terrace on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And also the spiritual, political connection. The reason I went was because I just didn't want to be home. I wanted to be with other people.
Mm.
And I've always seen spirituality as that thing outside of us which connects us with others.
Yeah,
I agree.
What was it like there?
It was a relatively small room, and what I'm told is they ended up opening three additional rooms to accommodate the group. So there was about 1,000 people. The room was, to me, it was like the best of a church service. It was joyful. I did hear a lot of people saying, "Thank you, Jesus," around me. And others just raising their hands and cheering at the appropriate moments and booing at a few other moments, like, you know, when he got on the helicopter. And
appropriately.
People saying, bye-bye, bye-bye. But anyway, it just felt very, very joyful. Someone said, "I don't recall seeing so many people so happy in one place in a long time."
Wow.
I have had those moments in church.
Yeah.
When we were just all engaged in praise and thankfulness. And I guess what I'd like to, you know, hear from Chuck maybe is that there is a similarity here, this thing of hope that there's something new coming that we can look forward to, change we can believe in, whatever. But, you know, at the same time, we know that he's not God. We know he's just a guy.
Mm.
And yet somehow our spirits have been touched by this now president in such a way that it is very spiritual. It's something that I have never associated with politics before.
And, oh.
You know, my husband and I have never given money to a campaign. We've never worked for a campaign until this one.
Mm.
So,
boy, What a beautiful sentiment. What a wonderful way to tie in the themes of this week.
Yeah.
Chuck Pfeiffer, again, just to briefly introduce you and Gene properly, you know, many know Chuck Pfeiffer as the founder and for 20 years the director of the Madison Urban Ministry. Last 10 years or so, Chuck has been a spiritual counselor and continues to be a leader in our community. And his wife Jean was with us as well for 14 years, a psychotherapist, someone now again who is also exploring the areas of spiritual support. They again are, and we'll talk about details and give you some more information in a second, about to embark on another session of the Historic Jesus Seminar. But Chuck, your response to Diana.
I think you're right, Diana, and one of the things that I was struck by Stephanie talking about non-believers, because at one level we all believe in something that guides our lives.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, one of the things that Obama touches is a deep yearning in all of us for something more. And
right.
I appreciated also your saying that it's outside of ourselves and connects us to others. And I think that definitely is something that's being tapped here rather than having us be adversaries all the time.
Mm.
Out of curiosity, I was relating the experience of friends who were on the mall that suddenly found themselves engaging in conversation with the people around. Did you make any connections like that in Monona Terrace by chance?
Well, actually, certainly. The people on either side of me who scooted over to let me in. My husband was gathering sound bites for WORT, interviewing people, and, yes, definitely. Definitely. And I think I have felt very connected just this whole year with people outside of my religious tradition, maybe people without any church connections at all, people at work. But yeah, it was just, I was looking around and it was just quite a hodgepodge of people, young and old, kids were there, different races. Just,
that's what we need.
And I'm sorry to say that I haven't seen that so much in my church, and it's kind of making me want to look around a little bit.
Sure.
You know, it just seemed more like, it really did feel like church at its best in that room.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, I must say, you must be a deeply spiritual person to be able to tolerate one of those radio guys that you hang out with who's always going around doing interviews when you just want to be, yeah, I know how that is.
Sure,
yeah.
Right. Thanks for your call, Diana.
All right, thank you.
Thanks so much.
And we also have one more call.
Oh, great.
We got David in Madison.
Hi. First off, I do think that President Obama is doing a really good job at trying to bring people together. But one thing, and I appreciate the tone of the show right now, trying to bring people together, but there is something that I find really disturbing, and I can't believe more people aren't talking about this, although ironically, your last caller is on the opposite end of me on this. And that's while President Obama was making a call to, I'm going to say, the 40% of Americans that didn't support him, saying, let's come together under commonalities, which is what I think a spiritual person should do. Within his crowd, there are people that were booing every time a Republican came out, who were also, by the way, trying to share in this event.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had the experience, I'm going to say at least five times in the last week, of being in businesses where people either came up to me, or the people I was with, or were right next to us, just bashing the other side. And I think President Obama is doing what he should be doing. But then there's this group that are enjoying this moment of I don't want to say hope. I don't want to sound too like flowery of
sure.
optimism. Well, of new possibilities. That's what I want to
say. What that reminds me of is the time when I think toward the end of the campaign, John McCain was encountering these really hostile groups who were actually, saying some really incendiary racist things, and finally just stopped and said, "Hey, that's not what this is all about. That's
right.
not who he is." Do you think maybe one of the things that struck me is. The commentators were saying that it was unprecedented that Obama actually escorted the Bushes, warmly said goodbye. There were hugs exchanged. You know, what a wonderful example of reconciliation and putting a lot of things past. You know, it was just a powerful statement. But do you think he explicitly needs to say something to other people right now that are doing the kinds of things you're talking about?
Well, I don't think it was appropriate for the first speech.
Sure.
Although, had I been there, I probably would have said something. But I think that if the tone doesn't change, it could get. I'm honestly I'm going to use the word scary.
Yeah.
And if basically the winners of an election take that as an opportunity to say to the losers, you are dirty and you people are finished, that's not bringing together.
Mm-hmm. Gene Pfeiffer, I see you shaking your head. You have some agreement with that, I assume?
Absolutely.
I know that both of you work in the area sometimes of conflict resolution, getting people to see common ground. I think this is a time of opportunity for folks to engage in some of those things, Gene?
Well, I think the thing that was said by Stephanie, you spoke of being included as a person who wasn't religious or in a specific church, but that you're spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very struck. I was struck by that when I heard it. And also my sister and my brother who has died, they were kind of the family heathens. And my sister used to kid about how once our brother died, that she was the only remaining heathen, our family, strong spiritual people, United Methodist background also, like John. But I was very taken by her being very touched by this and being very included, feeling sometimes she's a spiritual human being,
right.
You know, and doesn't choose to, she's not, she doesn't have a doctrine that she goes by. She doesn't have she's also United Methodist connected.
Yeah.
But at this point, like I said, my sister and my brother used to tease about being the family's heathens. This helped her to feel very included, and she would have, whether or not that had even been said, she would have liked Obama very, very much, and having had him say this was very important to her also. So with you, Stephanie, my sister, you're surely representative of huge numbers of people.
And we're not bad people
there.
Either.
Absolutely
I don't know.
No.
We get this bad rap.
Absolutely
it's like if
not.
We don't follow this, you know, doctrine or dogma or whatever it is.
I have friends that don't fit into any kind of box that way, and you know, count you among them that I consider to be some of the most spiritual people I know.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
David, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
We need to take a short break, but we will be back with Chuck and Gene Pfeiffer, and we'll be talking about the upcoming seminar that focuses on the historic Jesus seminars. This is Forward Forum. I'm Stephanie Woods with John Quinlan. We'll be right back.
Steph, do you want to lead into this discussion? Maybe just general question?
Well, what we were just talking about in the break, I thought was great, Chuck, that you were saying about just including everybody and more of an inclusionary kind of a religion. Speak more about that.
Yeah. Well, there are people talking now about the fact that we're progressing from the modern to the postmodern era. And one of the things that characterized the modern era, in addition to the scientific approach, was that you still had one large system that sort of took everybody in count. So I'm a Lutheran, I'm a Catholic, I'm a Jew, I'm an American. And in the postmodern era, those are breaking down, and so you're having many more multiplicities. And for example, in novels now, rather than having a big theme that all the characters fit into, you have the same story told by different characters in different settings. And that's characteristic of postmodernism. And so I think that the diversity we're starting to see is characteristic of where the human consciousness is moving, the human species is moving. And so as we deal with issues of spirituality and religion and politics, to recognize that diversity is much more normative. And so, for example, in the seminar, looking at this man, Jesus, and asking in his first century context, what issues was he dealing with? And now in our context, with our particular worldview, my personal one, not the one that I say I'm American or I'm a Lutheran or I'm a Catholic, has to say to me, and how do I make decisions in that context? Because one of the dark sides of this dimension is that we all disassociate and we sort of back off, and so we don't know exactly what we believe or feel, whereas in the past we were told what we believed and felt, and therefore, you know. And so I think that's a real challenge to us in politics as well as spirituality is how to develop some sort of value system and ethos that we can commit to and work on even though there's multiplicity in it.
You're explaining in the break, there was a phrase relative to hope that you also define this as?
Yeah, at this stage we're calling the seminar a seminar on hope. And I think one of the hopes is that each one of us, rather than being less than we think we are more than we think we are. And so maybe one of the things that replaces the old religious doctrines, independent of the religious tradition, is that I try to explore what my potential is and how I can live more into that potential, recognizing that perhaps my potential is much greater than my family or I've thought it was.
We want to expand on this, and Gene, I'm sure you have some things to say too about the hope that you've drawn through the experience of working on this over the years.
Chuck, what can somebody expect going to the seminar? What are they in for?
What they're in for is a discussion of this man's life and the situations in his teachings to see how he lived them out and what that applies to us. And the discussion format is not argumentative. It's in the format of dialogue. Mm. And so that we're taught to respect one another's positions, even though we may not agree with them, and to support each person on their own journey. And then it's combined with art and music and dance and drawing and things like that. So it's not just talk.
That sounds awesome. How do you maintain that non-argumentative? Well, what are your rules? Or that seems like that would be something difficult, considering this is such a touchy subject.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things about dialogue, which is something that's being bantied about a lot now in the population, is that you try to listen deeply to one another, and when you have a strong agreement or disagreement, you ask what biases are being tapped on my own part. And then as you look at that, you realize that the other person also has biases. And so even though you may disagree on content, you're both at the same disadvantage in having biases that are blocking your ability to see new positions. And that leads to a support of one another, even though you may disagree on the issues.
Gene, are there special insights that someone might share who didn't grow up in a Christian tradition that participated in the seminars?
I think I'm not going to answer your question exactly because I'm
sure.
Not sure I know how to answer it. The thing that I would add to the seminar, and maybe it will address your question, John, too, is the piece that isn't the intellectual, rational, linear when we use just our heads, but
yeah.
The piece that, and perhaps that would address part of what you're asking, John, where you look at some of your feelings, and with sculpture and with art and with music, it touches places in your heart and in your spirit, having already thought about some of these things and talked about them and heard what other people think. So it goes to that place, our intuition or however that, whatever it is, it moves in and through us that isn't us exactly, expresses itself, and particularly comes to mind sometimes with sculpture. You hold the piece of clay and don't have an idea what it will look like, and your hands simply form something.
Yeah,
and
it
you
was
look
amazing.
At that, and it's like, oh my gosh, where did that come from? And it came from wherever that, whatever that deep sense of being is. I don't know the words, the essence, but it feels like it's more than I could do with my hands by saying, well, I think I'll make a blah, 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 because it comes out and looks like, oh my goodness.
And I think you are answering the question well, because my experience was, for lack of a better metaphor, it was a level playing field, I think, for anyone, no matter what experience they came from, because we didn't make any assumptions that you had to have an extensive knowledge of the Bible or historical knowledge of the time or anything else. And we all brought personal insights that were equally important, into the discussion. So, yeah, no, it's a great discussion. Do we have someone on the line?
We do, actually. We've got Laura in Madison.
And so was that your description of spirit or spirituality or
what is that?
I think I don't know that there are really words in my life to describe it, that whatever moves in us that I relate to my spirit just moves if I'm listening, if I'm tuned in the seminar. By use of art, by use of sculpture, it expresses itself. So I don't know how to define it.
Does that answer your question?
And yet you promote it.
Chuck, you want to try that?
Well, you promote it in the sense that you're responding to it, I guess, but you're not necessarily advocating it for others to believe in. And so it's got the sense of a sort of a mutual exploration where each person is plumbing their own depths. And then as one person shares what's profoundly important to them, it touches something in you. And that, one of the images we use is building a group mind. And
so you're assuming that it touches something.
Yes.
Okay, Gene has another response.
I'm just thinking, seeker is the word that I would use to describe what happens. Many, many, if not most of us who attend are spiritual seekers. Not necessarily.
We would like to feel this.
Laura, are you speaking from a place of you would like to get in touch with that and you haven't, or where are you coming from?
Well, yeah, I guess so, yeah. I would like to be a spiritual person, but it just hasn't
moved you yet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It took me a while, too.
Well, and I would say, knowing who you are, and we should,
it won't
come as a surprise to folks to know that Laura is a longtime co-host of the show, and we've talked about these topics before again. I would easily put you in the category of someone who may or may not have a box religion that you put yourself in, but you're one of the most spiritual people I know.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene, and there's been some people that have written that the yearning itself is a manifestation of that dimension.
Interesting.
I mean, Laura, you know, I think just the process of exploration you've gone through as a transgender person going through that transition, the insights, the depth that you bring to your discussion of what that journey was like, for me, just resonates deeply as a spiritual journey.
And John, the afternoon that I spent with
Joanne Bland, and you were there for kind of the after discussion that we had, yeah.
Anyways, it's hard to understand what spirit is.
Sure.
For me.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, let me finish your thought if you could. So the afternoon you spent, was that, did that feel that way? Or did you feel that you weren't experiencing that? Or what?
Well, I asked Joanne about hope.
Yeah.
And specifically about hope. And how could she feel hope with all that she had been through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, Laura, thanks. I think you're raising questions that a lot of folks have
that are
exploring that.
Wait a minute. Is spirit akin to hope? Is hope akin to spirit?
Stay on the line. We'll keep this discussion going. Go ahead, Gene.
I have a thought about that. My sense of, and I again don't know the words, but when I moved, for example, to tears or to laughter or to something profound that bring in my spirit, whether it's sunset or sunrise, it sounds a little bit trite. I'm just trying to explain. Mm. When I experience those things, watching the whatever those things are that bring us to tears or that move us deeply, that is somehow spirit, that is part of this cosmic
emotion.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, emotion. Also, people who I'm more apt to be a strong feeling intuitive person. Some people experience it with their heads more, with their thinking, and I think we all would like to have some of each. And yet to trust that those things that come up in us, that they just connect to those deep places, whether you call it spirit or heart or, but to just to trust that that's part of this whole reality, this essence, and I call it beyond.
Laura, I apologize. We have the blessing today, and we'll define exactly what we mean by that, but of having actually a lot of callers now awaiting. So,
good.
So,
good.
So, thanks for your call,
thank
Laura.
You so much.
Thanks for sharing.
You brought up a wonderful area of discussion and stuff.
And we have Karen in Sacramento. You're on.
I didn't want to be a ham or anything with the draft.
We're calling
right.
out to you.
I might share a dream that I had.
Sure.
I was trying to finish a master's thesis and work a full-time job and, you know, do like most Americans are doing under so much stress these days. And I went into like this sort of hypocaustic state, and I was asking what the meaning of life was. And the thesis happened to be, you know, paleontology, too. And I heard this kind of dark voice from above, and it said, the meaning of life is that to which you ascribe to it, like the meaning you give it.
Mm.
And like the other day I was walking through a store and someone said, you have a bounce in your step. And I said, well, I think it's because we have a new president, you know. And when Barack Obama was welcoming the non-believers, I said, wow, that's mm-hmm. cool. Because mm-hmm. look at Pat Tillman, you know, his whole family were at, you know, vocal, what do they refer to themselves as? Not peasants, but they are certainly, they don't believe in an afterlife.
Yeah.
And look what Pat Tillman did for us. He turned down that wonderful football career and the beautiful wife to go fight because that was his intention at the time. He was under the impression that he was, you know, helping to defend his country. And these are all examples of spirit. Anytime we give meaning, I believe.
Chuck Pfeiffer?
Yes, and I think one of the things I'd like to add to that, Karen, is there's a movement going on now talking about attraction, and there's a video called The Secret that's been out among a number of people. But it seems that the thing that you anticipate is the thing that you at least notice, if not attract. And so that has something to do with spirit, I think, too.
Oh, and also, yes, and the Rosicrucians are big on that as well.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for this interesting talk.
Well, thank you for contributing
calling.
Once again, Karen. Take care.
Hey.
We need to take a quick break, but we will be back with Chuck and Gene Pfeiffer. This is Forward Forum.
There are lyrics here, too, right? Jesus lyrics,
that's,
right?
That's when we're supposed to take it away.
I see. Okay. Well, welcome back to Forward Form. John Quinlan here with
Stephanie Woods.
And we've got some music in place now. And actually, last time I think Chuck was on the program, and we covered this topic of bringing in selections from Jesus Christ Superstar, which for me at the age
Which I was in, by the way.
Were you really? Which
I was.
Play?
I was one of the ladies.
Ah.
I was one of the apostles' women.
Cool.
That was during my high school days.
So did you sing like Everything's All Right?
I know. I know that whole thing backwards and forwards. I love that play.
I never knew that.
Yes.
Me too. Because, yeah, that's how I go on cross-country trips, you know, with friends. You know, that's how we get through.
But around, I know Easter's coming because then I get this sense that I need to listen to Jesus Christ Superstar again. You know, and I'm not a big Christian or anything. And it's great. I mean, it's a great story. You know, he can be a man that we can respect without being a crazy, you know.
That's right.
When I was nine, that was neat, I think, because I think of all, you know, even being a pastor's kid and all the sermons and all the other stuff that I've heard over the years, this was something that made him somebody who was accessible, who was not all that different from me.
To the masses.
And is that part of what is the experience of the seminar?
Exactly. That's exactly what it's part of. And to know that, in fact, those characteristics are ours as well.
Mm-hmm.
And are we willing to engage them in the risks that they involved?
Again, we're talking about the Historic Jesus Seminars. Our guests are Chuck and Gene Pfeiffer. Chuck, as many of you know, a long time executive director, now retired from that post of Madison Urban Ministry. He also founded that group and or helped found that group. And then Gene, who is his partner in doing these seminars, psychotherapist, proud mom, many other roles in this community. And again, discussion we're having is about religion and politics. And
we've got John on the east side.
John.
Yeah, well, this seminar kind of interests me. It seems to be a very difficult subject because we don't know who the historic Jesus was. We have third-person accounts in the first four Gospels. The first three were written about 30 years after his death, and John was about, roughly 100 A.D. But he was so radical, according to the Catholic accumulated perception of even what is said in those Gospels, that it seems to me it's an almost impossible subject. He was so radical, he almost repudiated all of the Old Testament. In other words, the idea of a God coming to earth sounds like the old Grecian mythology, even though the Nicene Council paradox is supposed to resolve it. It doesn't resolve it for a real monotheist. The idea of repudiating all of the Jewish Old Testament law and saying that you really shouldn't care about earthly success or the use of war when the traditional idea of the Jewish Messiah was a military Messiah to free the Jews from the surrounding Romans and the rest of them, and the idea that the whole idea of life is not to dwell on this world, but to think of the next world. He even repudiated family values. He said we should give up the family. My whole point is, he was a complete rebellion to everything that was in the Judaic mindset, and I just don't see how you can get to the real historic Jesus since we don't have any real written first-person testimony of what was said. I find it very hard to believe that he was the radical the Catholics have made him out to be over the centuries.
I think your discussion, you clearly understand a lot of this material, and one of the ways we try to get as close to what Jesus may have said is by something called, as you know, historical critical technique, that you look at the three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and see how they differ and see what might an earliest. And you're also right that there's a lot of myth that's built up around Jesus, particularly in the Christian tradition, but otherwise too. And so the question is, how do we get to that? And in part, each person has to answer that question for themselves, and you've given some very powerful answers for yourself. And to be in a dialogic group where you state yours and other people state theirs, and we let them stand in the middle of the circle, not trying to beat anyone down, but like a bouquet that's got both roses and dandelions in it, and then let that sink in through the art and dance and things like that and see how it evolves in each of our lives is the power of the seminar. And you would be a wonderful participant.
I think we've lost John, but I will make this deal that, John, if you decide to sign up for this, just by virtue of finally being able to meet you after all these years of you phoning into our show, I will take the course again,
John.
And I'll enjoy it. But
take it then, John. We'll get two for one.
For those of you, again, who want to know more about this, the phone number is 608-251-3125, CD Pfeiffer, P-F-E-I-F-F-E-R, EIFER@TDS.net. And all of this, by the way, you can link to through the website forwardforum.net. You may have to take an extra step, I think, and link to our blog where I have a further description written and then all of this contact information. But again, as always, forwardforum.net is your first stop if you'd like to find out more about all of this. You know, as John was talking, I guess part of what occurs to me, and this was maybe, again, a child's view of the faith, and I don't – it's hard to talk about this. I don't want to in any way to discount Judaic tradition. But for me, I guess, you know, Christ coming – I mean Jesus coming and the lessons he talked about in the New Testament – was in some way cutting through the fine print and getting at the really important stuff.
One level, and it's also important to recognize that at one level he's recognized as Isa, the prophet of Islam, a prophet within Islam, not the prophet, and also practiced as a rabbi, Yeshua, in terms of the Jewish tradition at his time. And so it's not that this is – particularly this is not a Christian discussion, but it's rather trying to get at that historic man that has been valued through the centuries. And we could have been focused on Buddha and some of the other important historic people too. This one happens to focus on this person and then asks each individual to engage the issues he was engaging from their own life situation and ask what it implies for them.
Gene.
There's one other piece. I don't think it's been mentioned specifically. There's a Jungian way of addressing some of these questions and working with the art media. Carl Jung, who is many of you would be familiar with Carl Jung, some of his images and ideas are incorporated, and that makes it it helps us to relate our own life experience, our hearts, our spirits, our minds, with the Jesus or Jesus experience of those many, many thousands of years ago. Not many, many thousands, but so it contemporizes it in the sense of the Jungian piece brings it to a more contemporary place, and I find that very, very provocative.
For example, there's a story that has been dealt with in the past in the seminar where Jesus heals a man, and then the participants are asked to find what aspect within themselves needs healing and how that moves forward in terms of who helps them or what helps them with the inside. So it takes the story and not only deals with it historically, but then also takes it into our own inner world through Jungian insights.
This is Forward Forum. I guess another thing that strikes me, a bumper sticker comes to mind that Pilate was a governor and Jesus was a community organizer.
That's funny.
But, you know, in a bigger sense, I mean, you know, John alluded to this, the notion of Jesus is radical. You know, we try to define Jesus so much, I think, by the beliefs of man and not necessarily by what he may or may not have been. And John's right. No one knows exactly who he was. But on the other hand, this is very analogous to discussions of Dr. King, who we like to homogenize and make into a touchy-feely civil rights leader. But when he talked about Vietnam or about the need to curb our materialism or the evils of empire, you know, we don't want to hear those messages. You know, that was him stepping out of bounds. Sometimes it seems like Christ really – I mean, Jesus really did step out of bounds.
In fact, there's a whole set of teachings where he said, it is said, but I say. And so he's trying to complete the Jewish law rather than to counter it. And also, it was interesting, in church this morning, one of the prayers of one of the people is a prayer that Barack and Michelle could be allowed to be people and not turned into more than they can be, so that the messianic yearning is still there and the temptation is to turn Barack Obama into our Messiah.
Oh, interesting.
I'm curious, what moves you guys to hold these seminars? What got you into this? She points at Chuck.
Chuck's really the main
You're
person.
You're just going
Chuck's
along the for the ride.
Chuck got you into this.
Well, that's the way a marriage works. You see, it goes back and forth.
Is that how that is?
That's right.
I'm learning.
Better or worse, you know.
Quickly add that although –
Let her speak, Chuck. Come on.
Chuck and I don't always do – we've been married 45 years and we've got some issues between
great.
Us. And yet this is apart from our marriage. It's something that unites us around something that's very meaningful to us. And I will say to anybody who is interested that Chuck does an amazing job in facilitating this process. I am not a leader. I am there. And I do it – I've done it 20 years, I suppose. And every single time I have new insights, I gain new understandings of Jesus and of myself and of relationships. It's just really fine. And I don't say that about everything about my dear husband.
Well, and I just need to chime in, though, knowing of your humility here and perhaps maybe not being aware that you know, my experience of you in that process was the best sense of a facilitator, someone who was a catalyst for the participation of others. You found very, very powerful yet subtle ways, I think, of getting the rest of us involved.
One of the other things in terms of your question of why it's so important – the years from 500 minus 500 to plus 500 BCE were the time that all the great world religions were formed, and Islam, Buddhism, Christianity, Judaism. And that was called the Axial Age. One of the things I'm thinking is that maybe in our society, humankind is moving into a second axial age, that there's a major shift occurring within humankind. And this seminar is one way to get individuals to engage their full potential.
What would you say to somebody who's maybe feeling shy about this because it sounds so Jesus, there's so much Jesus to it? What would you say to someone who's just a little hesitant about
that? And we've had Jewish people who have to deal with the negative implications of Jesus on Christians, for Jews. And he just said, you know, he just had to constantly remind himself that we were talking about a man who was a first century Jew and what that implied for his own life. But you're absolutely right that those kinds of things are going to come up and we just have to deal with them. But we do our very best. And this year I'm going to focus it even more on looking at this man's situation, his belief system in the first century, and then what is your belief system and what is your situation and how do his teachings apply to you or not?
I don't know if this is a hypothetical or if someone has participated, but what about for someone who comes from the Islamic faith?
Yeah, I don't know that we've had anybody from Islamic faith. We've had Buddhists, we've had atheists, we've had agnostics, we've had Jews, we've had various varieties of Christians participate.
Would a person who's Islamic be comfortable?
Oh, heavens, it would be fantastic because that's one of the Abrahamic religions. Judaism, Christianity, Islam all come from the same roots. And so to have that kind of mix, the greater the diversity, the better the seminar works.
We're coming down to less than our last minutes. Chuck and Jean, the hour has flown by.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
We really appreciate it. John Quinlan here with Stephanie Woods.
Stephanie Woods.
Please join us next week for Ford Forum.